we want to invite you to the Intentional Motherhood Retreat 2025. For the past 2 years, hundreds of mothers from around the country have gathered with us for a weekend of worship, teaching, and connection, and really to seek God together. And we can't wait to do it all again at this year's Motherhood Retreat, this time in Portland, Oregon, October 23rd through 25th. We know that motherhood is both beautiful and it's hard. It's both life-giving and exhausting, and it's full of both joy and sacrifice. It stretches us and forms us more than anything else. This retreat really is a spiritual formation retreat for us mothers. We aren't going to give you a bunch of tips and tricks for how to be a better mom, but we are going to press into how motherhood gently leads us to spiritual formation, how relationships are essential for the journey, and how our connection with God spills over to our connection with our families. This retreat is for women who desire to be mothers someday, all the way to grandmothers and anyone in between. Mothers of babies and toddlers, young children, teenagers, and even adult children. This intergenerational gathering is a chance for all ages and stages of mothers to learn from one another, to encourage each other, and to simply be together. Because motherhood isn't meant to be done alone. The late Dallas Willard said spiritual formation can't be a private thing. It is a matter of whole life transformation. You need to seek out others in your community who are pursuing the renovation of the heart. And that is exactly what we are going to do together. So come join us October 23rd through 25th for the Intentional Motherhood Retreat in Portland, Oregon. We can't wait to see you.
You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. All right. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. We are here today. And when I say we, I mean Elizabeth and I are here. We recently, a few days ago, put up a question on social media about parenting kids with neurodiversity and special needs, as that is a part of our dynamic and story. And so we just decided to jump on really quick. We had a little bit of space and time and decided to actually just jump on and have a conversation about some of the stuff that we are learning in real time. We have a whole army of people that have been very gracious to help us. Our network of care is broadening and has been very broad, and we're really grateful for that. And so we're not only learning a lot, but also having to live a lot, which is both good. It's also hard. It's really hard if we're being honest. So we want to talk about that today, which is both something that's near and dear to our heart and part of us hopefully helping you wherever you're at in this journey. Also, just want to say thank you to everybody who's rated and subscribed to the podcast. If you haven't had a chance to do that, that is so helpful. One of the ways to say thank you is simply to just rate the podcast if you can on Apple or Spotify. Leave a comment. That's helpful. On YouTube, if you can subscribe and or leave a comment, that's also really helpful. A thumbs up is good there too. So thank you for all that have done that. So today, let's talk about this. Honey, I'm going to hand it to you because I'm personally, this topic is both like near and dear to my heart. It's also really heavy. So I would love you to maybe carry a little bit of this part of just seeing some of the questions and all that.
Yeah, well, I think maybe before we even get to questions, maybe anybody who is new to listening or doesn't know our whole story, we did years ago record an episode about our daughter, Birdie. I think I cried through the whole thing. Probably doesn't even make very much sense. I feel like we need to re-record an episode on her story. But just, you know, I think maybe anybody who's navigating this as a parent, if you're going to be listening to somebody's, I don't want to, I guess, advice or opinions, it's important to know that they have also, they're also practitioners. Yeah. Of what they're saying. It's, and so just a very short version of the different dynamics in our home that I think give us any reason to even be able to talk about this. And I love the way you said these are things we're learning in real time. This is not, we've got this figured out and do what we say. You will not hear that from us. No. But our daughter, Birdie, the very short version, when she was 6 months old, was diagnosed with a very rare form of epilepsy called infantile spasms. And it's rare and different than most epilepsy in the fact that it causes very significant brain damage. And it happens very quickly. And her whole story is miraculous. Mm-hmm. It could take multiple podcast episodes to share. And she is a total miracle. But what she's gone through has not left her unhindered. Mm-hmm. And so she has significant parts of her brain that are damaged that cause a whole host of struggles from sensory processing to OCD, ADHD, extreme difficulty with impulse control and perseveration, where her brain gets stuck on thoughts and ideas. I think the best way to describe her right now is that she's brilliant in many ways, and like intellectually, like academically, she's doing amazing, but emotionally, she's almost 9, and I would say emotionally, she's about 4. And add to that complexity, she is already at a young age, due to her medical history and medication she was on, her body is starting puberty on the early side. So hormones are shifting and changing with about the emotional state of a 4-year-old. So it's, and add to that complexity, she also has autism. And so there's just a lot of layers and dynamics. And then in our other kids, we also have a son with dyslexia and ADHD. And so there's a lot of complexities in our home with all of that. So I feel like come at it from, yes, neurodiversity, but also medical trauma and a lot of layers that we've had to unpack and are still having to unpack.
And maybe also to say, we are slow to talk about this in a sense, because this is also their story.
Yeah.
So we're giving as much as we're comfortable giving, but we're not going to overly share certain parts of their life and story, because it's theirs too. And we're not trying to in any way have this conversation on their behalf as a way to, you know, have people listen in, because we're interested. You can ignore this episode if this doesn't, you know, apply to you. Our hope is really just to say, this is a really, really, really hard thing, and people that are in it know it. And that's why even some of the questions, or even some of the things that people are saying, is like, they saw the question on social media and said, you know, just tearing up even thinking about it, right? It's, if you're in it, you know that this is a hard, often lonely, confusing, challenging spot. So our hope in any way is to just come and hopefully give you some perspective, some encouragement, some practical tools, stuff that we've learned the hard way. We've done a lot of this wrong. So I think it's important to say that too. One of the ways we figured out how to survive and move through it at all is by actually not being experts at it, by failing in a lot of these areas and doing it wrong first. And then having lots of very smart, godly people help us along the way and show us a better way, a different way. And really, that's what it is. It is parenting in a completely different way than maybe with your neurotypical kids, or maybe kids that don't have some of these disadvantages or disabilities. And also to say, like, people might listen to this, and language is changing so much right now. It's kind of obnoxious, actually, to where we can't use, you know, you can't say, I don't know what I can't say when it comes to kids with or without, and like, you're saying it in a way that's negative. So if you're like super sensitive to the language around disabilities, or those with neurodivergence or whatever, and you're like, the language police, can I just ask for your patience? Because I think what we're trying to do is just simply say, those who need a different kind of help that would not be the typical type of help that kids need, we are wanting to talk about that specifically. So if we can just already assume your grace in that, that we might not get all the words right. But we do want to talk about
it. Or in a year, all of our words could be completely not okay anymore.
That's a nuisance for sure.
Funny.
So let's move to you all you all were very gracious and responded and had some really beautiful questions, also really hard questions. I think even reading them for me, we haven't even talked about it, but it's hard to even read them because it's like I know what that feels like. I can see the question and a feeling arises.
Yeah.
And it's a hard one. And so I think it's just all to say thank you for being vulnerable to share these questions. And we'll be as honest as we can.
Yeah. Well, you took us right there. Let's not start with a softball. Let's start with the one that I read that I was like, oh, yes, I understand. Someone asked how to get to a place of pure, genuine gratitude that God chose this difficult journey for you.
Not there yet. Move on to the next one. I'm kidding. How to get to a place of pure, genuine gratitude. Maybe can I say, though, something? Are you going to say something?
I have so much to say about this topic. Say whatever you want to say, though.
Well, I mean, I'll make mine brief because I'm sure you'll have a better, elegant way to say it. But I don't know that you ever do. I don't know if you ever do. I don't know if you ever get to a spot where you're like, I just have genuine gratitude that God gave me this difficult journey and I am just elated and feel nothing but gratitude. I don't know if that happens this side of heaven. And so I would say that most of life is mixture. I look at Birdie right now as an example, and I think I don't know what version we would have gotten, but I just love who she is. And I love every part of her little life and her quirkiness and her uniqueness. I do. I really do. That's one side of me. And then there's this other part that is like grieving and having to learn how to parent differently. It's stretching every part of my own known ability of how to lead and parent. It's asking things of me that I can't even fully fulfill. It's requiring something that I don't fully have. And so I know that I can hold the tension personally of like, yes, I see that there is a gift in it for us. I think I am grateful that God has allowed us and entrusted us with her life. I, at the very same time, it's really hard. It's heavy. It's challenging. I don't know that you ever get to that spot. So that's my hopeful, non-hopeful answer.
No, I mean,
or response rather.
I agree with you 100%. I think the part of this question that stood out to me first, was getting to a place of gratitude that God chose this difficult journey for you.
Ooh. That's another, theological. I'm just going to just warn you right now. We hold.
Well, I can't.
A level, it's hard, but this is going to be a theological thing. Go ahead.
Yeah. And I don't even want to do a deep dive into theology of it. But I think that word theology, what we believe about something, is really important because suffering blows up the theology that was handed to us about God and forces us, or at least I think it should, but I think most of the time it just does, to really face the things that we believe about God, the things that we just say in passing. Mm-hmm. And I think I would have, prior to Birdie's story, probably worded a question very similar to this. But then when you are holding a sick baby who was born healthy, and now you're being told their life is going to look nothing like you thought it was going to, you're forced in that moment to really ask big questions about God. Like, I don't know that I could say, I still can't say, God did that to her. I think if I were to say God chose this for our family, that's also me saying God did that to her. And that's just not the God that I read about in the scriptures. I also, when you read all the different theologies of sufferings from theologians, it's hard to pick one that feels like that's absolute truth. I think the longer we've been on this journey, the more I've come to terms with being okay with the mystery and the parts that we're not going to understand. I don't think God did this to Birdie's brain, but somehow he did allow.
It's just, it's the story.
There's a mystery.
Yeah. It's the story of Job.
Yeah.
He, I mean, it's allowance. And he saw he was okay and knew, I mean, I was just reading about this recently. He saw what was in Job's heart and knew that Job could actually hold what was going to happen. And there was an allowance there. Obviously hold it with him. All to say, I think it's not as clear and black and white as we would hope it to be. Yeah. And I'm just agreeing with you that there's an allowance, but there's all of that, like, and also you have Romans, you know, God does work things together for good. He does bring good out of it, even though, like, it's a tragedy. And wherever you're at, if you're the person asking that question, like, obviously there's a tragedy built in there. Mm-hmm. And even if he didn't want it or allow, you know, all the different, wherever you get there, he still can actually use that for positive in ways and good. And so those are, again, the mysteries piece. I don't want to get into all the theology because there's differing.
There's differing views, and we need to hold space for each other for having differing views on all of that. I think my point is that you have to wrestle it. And there's if there's one resource I think that is, because we all know that parents of kids with special needs do not have a lot of extra time, but Tim Keller's book, I think it's Walking with God Through Pain and Suffering, I think is what it's called.
That's what it is, yeah.
He walks through kind of all the different theologies of suffering. First half of the book, I would say, is more like theology heavy. Second half is more like real life practical. But I think that when you have the time and space, that wrestle is important, because I think it's through that wrestle that this person asks, where do you get to a place of pure and genuine gratitude? And what you said, it's always mixture. It's not, I'm only grateful for this.
Or I'm only sad.
Exactly.
I hold both at the same time.
But I think you can't get to the purity and the genuine part that is gratitude and joy if you haven't wrestled through all the grief and the lament. And I think of Paul when in Romans, I believe it is, when he, you know, we love to quote the part of the verse that says that I will boast in my weakness, for his power is made perfect in my weakness. Like, that sounds really great, right?
It does sound good.
But right before that, he's talking about this thorn in the flesh that he had, this, what we think was a major, like, physical ailment. The Bible doesn't tell us exactly what it was, but a deep struggle, pain in his life, and how he asked God, begged him 3 times to take it away, and God said no. And then he says, so therefore I will boast in my weakness because of God's strength. And so I think that part's important. There's a wrestling and a grieving and a lament that I think in the beginning stages is like thick and it feels like it's the only thing we're doing. And then as you get further in the journey, it becomes just a part of your daily life where there's I don't think the grief will ever go away of what has happened to our daughter, but it's not the only thing we can see in the story anymore. It's a thing that comes up at inconvenient times. And there's right now we're in a stage of her journey where it feels like we're grieving a whole nother layer where grief is very present. Yeah. Yeah. But I know in a year or two, it's very likely that the grief won't feel that thick and maybe. There will be, and maybe it will, but I think there's a,
having to hold it.
Yeah. And there's these new muscles that begin to develop where you're able to hold both and see that it's in the tension of holding both that there's so much true, genuine joy and delight. Yeah.
It's both. I think it's both. And I think it's really important wherever you are at. Some of you might hear our story and your day-to-day requirements, what is required of you on the day-to-day might be even greater than what is required of us, and very well will be the case.
Yeah.
And I would just say, we see you, and hard is hard no matter what your heart is. So it's easy to compare this stuff, but I think there is a faith of sufficiency that God talks about. He wants to lead us to a faith of sufficiency, meaning that we get to a spot where we recognize that anything that happens, God can actually give us what we need to live in it and live through it with his power. And so you might need more power than us, and we need a certain level of power for sure. But I also think that we're praying for the faith of sufficiency. I think even recently, I was just in New York on a trip with a friend. He turned 40, and the present was his wife sending him and I to New York. It was a woe is me, you know, bummer. It was a big bummer. No, it was a great gift to be able to go with him and celebrate our friendship and his life. And it was awesome. But at the same time, when I was there, John Tyson's been on the podcast before. So I was connecting with John while I was in New York for a minute and some other friends that were there. And you know, if you know anything about John and his ministry, I think he's got a prophetic edge for sure. And he just said something in passing that I needed to hear. He said, you know, we get overwhelmed by life all the time. And I don't even know if we've talked about this, honey. So I'm sorry if we haven't. But life is that full right now where if you want a window into our life, we don't get much time to talk about anything, especially any of the extra like little flares of life. But he was just saying, you know, a lot of people, I hear a lot of people being very overwhelmed and very what's the best way to say, like, pressed by life, just completely like being pressed in on every side. And he said, I think we have a generation of people, and this is how he speaks in very authoritative language. And I love that about John. If you know him, you know that's his case, and that's his lane, and I love it. But that said, he said, we have a generation of people that are being pressed in on every side. We need a generation of people that begin to sit at God's feet and ask for greater capacity for the things he's asked them to do. Mm. He's given you a lot. Ask for more capacity. Mm. Now, that was in passing. He didn't mean anything by it in the sense of directing it towards my life. But I think when people are filled with the Spirit and when you are a person walking with Jesus, he begins to take these words and apply them where they need to be. And so for me, I was just like, I need to start asking for more capacity. Like, that is actually something I need to pray for. Mm. And so I would just maybe encourage you as a practical, very, very practical thing. I think you need to start praying for a capacity to match the responsibility that God has given you. It's very easy to drown in it all. It's very easy to complain. And listen, there's a level of complaining that I think is totally understandable when you look at the Psalms, when you look at Job's situation. Job complained at God. He never dishonored him. He never wrote him off. He never, did away with God, but he did complain at him, which is a very interesting, you know, very different thing. We've had a conversation recently on the podcast about complaining specifically. All I will say is I think there's a time that you feel all that, but you need to also say, God, I also need a greater capacity to hold what you're asking me to hold. And I think through that, there's a place, you know, to respond to this question. I think there is a pure, genuine gratitude that begins to come. It's never just gratitude alone, I don't think, mm-hmm. but you begin to feel like, man, God is giving me the capacity for this and I can be grateful for certain parts of this. So,
yeah.
As most of you know by now, this entire podcast was made possible by the generosity of our legacy builders. Intentional is a crowdfunded nonprofit made possible by the generosity of everyday, ordinary people like you and like me. Yes, we have some people who give monthly to legacy builders in a large dollar amount, but we desire to invite a whole new group of people to give at $10, $25, or even $30 a month. If you're like me, you most likely already pay 20 bucks a month for Netflix, 10 bucks a month for Apple Music, $5 a month for Spotify and various offerings. Would you consider giving monthly to Intentional at $5 or even $10 a month? Our dream is to see ordinary people step up and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families all over the world. So as you listen to the podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us as God is stirring in your heart? Will you partner with us, even if it's just for a few dollars a month? Thank you so much for considering joining. Enjoy the rest of today's episode. And if you're interested, go to our website, intentionalparents.org, and click on Give.
There's one more question kind of in the same vein, but it's how to lean on God to not worry about what the future holds for your child. And I think I put these two, they were asked by different people, but I put them in the same kind of category because I think that the natural worry and fear, what the fear looks like for us is yes about the future. What is that going to look like? Will she live on her own? Will she not? Will she ever get married? Will she not? All of those questions. But then there's also a lot of questions around what will our family culture look like moving forward? How will the other kids be once they leave our home. Like there's just a lot of dynamics that obviously she's not the only one affected. And so I think if you haven't done the first part, the first question that we just talked about, the honesty with God, the wrestling what you believe about God in the midst of hard things and what life is supposed to be all about, that's when a lot of that fear really can take over, not just surface, but take over, is when we're not leaning into those hard questions that, in all honesty, it's so hard to sit in those things when you're in the midst of caretaking.
Yes.
And I like to describe it as, you're not just a parent. You're not just a mom. I'm not just a mom to her. I'm also what I call a medical mom. It's like a whole other layer.
And that's not just what you call it. That is a thing.
Yeah.
That's a very real thing.
But you're playing both roles, and that's tricky. And there's a lot of fear and worry that comes up, but I think it's that honesty with God that helps combat it. And then recently I've just been reading and rereading Joshua 1 and just struck by, there's so much here. It could be a whole podcast episode in and of itself, but it's God telling Joshua he's to lead the people into the promised land. And he's promising that he will never leave him, never forsake him. He promises he's going to be with him. And then three times, all within a few verses, he tells him to be strong and courageous, but each time it's a little bit different. Be strong and courageous, because you're going to lead these people to inherit the land. Then he says, be strong and very courageous, then tells him to be careful to obey everything he's asked him to do in the book of the law. And then this is the verse that I've just been kind of living in. He says, again, have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. And then this part, do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. Mm. And I've just found myself discouraged and in despair a lot lately. And just keep needing that reminder, like, no, now is the time to be strong and courageous, to not be afraid or discouraged. Not that those things don't come up, the fear and the discouragement, the fear about the future, like this person's asking. But the reason that I don't have to be afraid is because the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. He's going to be with us in her future. He's going to be with our other kids in her future. He's going to be with her in her future. And so I think we need to shed this false reality that we're never going to worry about that. And that if I worry about it ever, I'm not trusting God. Well, that's just not.
That's not true.
True or real life.
Yeah.
It's the, are you catching yourself when you're sinking into operating out of fear and saying, no, God has not given me a spirit of fear. He's actually said, be strong and courageous. And he's promised that he will never leave me or forsake me. It's not that he's promised that everything will work out perfectly fine, but he has promised that he will never leave us and he will always be with us. And so I think those are the truths we need to cling to when that fear creeps up and be able to name it and acknowledge it when it does come up. But
that's it's trust. And I think faith in the scriptures is a really important word. But interestingly enough, when you read the scriptures and you translate that word faith, the word that is almost synonymous with it, and it better be said trust. It's better instead of faith replacing the word with trust. And so there's that story of healing and to the different stories of Jesus's healing and Jesus is saying, he says, your faith has made you well. Mm. Better translated, go, your trust has made you well. Mm. And I think it's really important to say that trust is obviously the antidote to worry, but to trust, depending upon where you're at, is a very difficult task sometimes because your trust structures are often built on the wrong things. We all come into life with them built on the wrong things, and it takes a lot of energy to get them onto the right things. And so you might be more of a novice in this place of trust where you know Jesus, but you're not actually trusting him when it comes to the outcomes of your life. That is, yes, a faith issue, but it's a trust issue. Like, do I trust that God actually has good for me? Psalm 23:6. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. Do you trust that God is actually good and has good for you, that even though you can't see it, that hopefully, hope against hope, that there could actually be some good that he does in their future, even though you can't comprehend it, see it, hold it, maybe even embody it? Can you trust that that could happen? And when you actually do trust and hold that, that is actually a part of faith and exercising faith. And if you don't have faith, the Bible's really clear. It's like, if you don't have faith, ask for faith, ask for more faith. And if you have enough faith to desire more faith, you have faith. So I know that sounds silly, but that's the truth. And so as we walk into the future with our little ones, like, do we worry? Sure we do, all the time. And there's many mornings, even this morning, we have a Christmas tree up right now because it's that season. And by the time this airs, that season will be over. But staring at the Christmas tree, thinking about all the future concerns and what about this kid going that way and this kid going this way and what could happen here. And, you know, you have to hold that. But if you don't have like a daily rhythm to unburden all that to God, like, oh my gosh, you game over. So yeah. I would also encourage you to find a way to have even a brief moment each day to give your worries to God, to verbalize, God, I am concerned that this kid will not walk with you. Or God, I am concerned that this little one will never be on their own. And I don't know how this plays out. Would you help it play out? Like, I think you need to actually also have a practice of handing those things over to Jesus in an active, tangible way. That's the only way that I know we get through each moment. So
I love that. Okay, let's switch gears a little bit. There were several questions around navigating relationships with these, when these dynamics are in your family, and several on like the loneliness and the isolation that comes. So one was how to explain to friends what you're going through and handle the friends who don't get it.
Pass. just write them out of your life. We've done so many episodes on this. Just excuse them. No, I'm obviously kidding.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's a really tricky one for us.
Yeah.
I mean, not just for us. I mean, I think it's a tricky for anybody. How do you explain what's going on? And then how do you handle friends that don't get it? Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'll speak from, because it's our lived experience to have kids who look quote unquote normal or typical on the outside. But the daily reality of their lives are very different than most. That in and of itself is isolating as parents, let alone to the kids themselves.
When it's not a physical disability or an obviously physical disability. Yeah.
Yeah. There is an isolation that comes with that, that nobody can fix. And I think for the first handful of years, I carried some anger with that. Almost, I think, subconsciously feeling like it was other people's fault for not, I wouldn't have been able to name that then. But I think maybe I held maybe a lot of unmet expectations that everyone would want to understand and try to understand. And I think after being at this a while now, and I still feel like we're new at it in many ways, I think I'm able to recognize that I think in suffering in general, there's a loneliness and isolation factor that comes with it because you are carrying a load that only you can carry, as much as you can have people in it with you who are carrying some of your burdens with you. The load is still yours. Birdie is ours. She's our responsibility. And as much as we have incredible family that's involved in the story, she's still our responsibility. And so now I think the loneliness is still hard. The isolation is still hard. But I think to also recognize there's something special that happens in your relationship with God when you've suffered deeply or are suffering, that comes out of the isolation and the loneliness, because he's the only one who truly gets it and understands. Like, I didn't understand the gravity of God sending his son to die until my own kids experienced horrific sickness, their daughter and their son, which is a whole other story for him to tell someday. And I just remember when our son got sick and remembering, like, having this realization that God knew the like heartache I felt as a mother, like feeling like my heart was being torn out of my chest, watching my son suffer in that way. And having this realization that God knows exactly what I'm feeling to a whole nother degree right now. And he had the power to rescue his son and didn't. Like, gives you a whole other paradigm for God that you wouldn't have without the loneliness and isolation. So I think there's beauty in that, and it's also really hard. And to this person's direct question, how to explain to friends what's going on.
Well, can I just, I want you to go to that. I just wanted to add what you just said about the loneliness piece was so important. And the other day I was talking to Abby, Tono and Abby, they've been on the podcast before, the great episode. And she's so in this with us and we all work together. She's so sweet, but she just said, you know, she knew I was heavy and she's like, how's it going? And I was like, well, beyond anybody, you know, like how hard some of this is. And we had just, and I just reminded, you know, I didn't even remind her. I just said it out loud. I was just saying, you know, we have such an amazing group of people like even Abby and your parents and others who check in and make sure we're okay. And at the very same time, you have to go on the desert journey alone. There's just no getting out of it. So maybe just to highlight, if you are feeling a level of loneliness, even though you have amazing maybe friends or support group, there is a level of all of this that you will have to go on by yourself, maybe with your spouse, alone. And it will not be anything but truly God's comfort and guidance. Because for us, as an example, very practically, eventually we go home at night and eventually everything turns off and eventually no one else is around to hold it. You don't get the kind of break or relief that you would, you know, I think in many ways hope for. There are moments, there are reprieve, there are vacations, there are certain things, right? There's moments in time, but at least for a while, we've had to go on that journey in a very, so like everybody does, you go on a certain level of that journey on your own. And even think about Jesus in the desert, being tempted by the enemy. Like he had support. He just couldn't, he couldn't take anybody with him. He had to go on that journey. And this is parent listening or mom or dad or marriage couple listening. This is your journey. And it's sometimes a very lonely one. And I don't think getting out of it or thinking that that's not going to be a part of it is fair to say. I think that it is a part of it. Yeah. It's one of the sadnesses and griefs that you have to hold, but it's maybe not evident at first. I think that we all do a great job of saying, we need support, or people saying, I want to support you. And that is true. And they are. And I don't think that discounts anybody that has, I mean, your parents moved over to where we live to offer shade to us. They're incredible. They offer shade in ways that we would have never had before. That said, it will never take the full weight of it because it's not theirs to hold. It's ours. And we can't give that to them. And honestly, it's not theirs to take. It's ours. It's ours to take responsibility for. So I just wanted to say that to agree with you and to also remind anybody listening that this is yours to hold.
I feel like that word you used at the beginning is going to probably work for every answer. That mixture, like there's an element to this that is isolating and lonely. And you do need community and people and to learn how to bring the people in who genuinely want to know, which is what this person started to ask, is how do I explain to friends what we're going through? And I think you look for the people who, even if they don't understand, they show that they want to know. And so your role becomes an educator. You can't expect them to know or understand. But if you know that they love you enough and care enough that they at least show a desire to want to know, those are the people you take the time and energy to explain, this is what's going on. You keep them in the loop. If they've expressed that they want to be in the loop and you feel like you have capacity, you let them know when you're doing another developmental pediatrician evaluation or there's a big thing you're praying for or new things happening or new stages, because raising kids with disabilities of any kind or neurodivergent kids, it's not linear. It doesn't stay the same.
No.
It changes constantly. And so I think you look for those people, and the ones who just don't understand, I think sometimes in certain seasons, some of those relationships just change a little bit. And it's really easy to be if you're not working through the things that are coming up in you, it's really easy to be angry about that or to be frustrated that certain people aren't investing more. I think there might be people that surprise you who really have, I mean, I even think of my mom, like, not that she surprised me in how like compassionate and helpful she is, but I think she surprised me in her ferocious appetite to truly learn and understand. She's
like on Zoom calls with us, with the doctors and evaluation reports. So she's like, can I sit in the Zoom call?
No, I send her every report and I'm like, I don't want to burden you with this. Like I don't, you know, and she reads every single one. And then she comes up with a list of questions that she would like to ask the OT or the, not in an overbearing way, but in a like, and her whole thing is I want to understand because this is my granddaughter and I want to know how to be in relationship with her. And I want to know how to help my daughter. And so I have to learn. And so, I mean, obviously I feel like I hit the jackpot with a mom like that. But if you have anybody in your life who's even just half willing to understand, bring, it's your job to then go after them and bring them in.
Can I also just add, in our experience, and sadly, I think this is the majority of experiences, a lot of people, the majority of people do not know how to hold this with you.
No.
They've never been trained. They've never taken I think first they don't have that as an experience or backdrop. Maybe that's just not even something that they desire to really even know how to carry someone else's burdens. I think culturally, it's not something we ever naturally learn unless you're forced into something like this. Mm-hmm. So I think it's easy to get frustrated at people, but we also have to remember even within the church context, this is not something that people learn actively how to hold other people's pain in a way that helps relieve truly that burden that they're holding. So I would just say, don't be surprised that the majority of friends or majority of even family do not know how to hold this with you. Mm-hmm. I would also say, if there's anyone, family or not, that shows any sort of interest, you'll know immediately.
Yeah.
And if you're listening to me, you know, like if you've encountered a person that truly hears you, listens to you, you'll know the difference immediately. And like Elizabeth said, I think you press into those people. You don't judge where they come from or the fact that they're family or not. Like you just say, thank you, Jesus. Yeah. And you invite them to hold some of that with you because that's a huge gift. That's a huge gift when people can do that.
Yeah. And I think what I keep finding is so often it's not that people don't always want to or have
I think they do want to.
I think around this topic specifically, people are afraid to bring it up and ask questions because they assume it's going to bring up too much for you, or maybe you don't want to talk about it. Or somebody just asked me the other day, said their husband was asking if we ever talk about like, or wonder about what the future might hold. And
now I'm so curious. Like, I can't wait to ask you after this.
I'll tell you later. Yeah. Like you could tell there was a little bit of like, I don't really want to ask directly because I don't want to like bring up stuff for them, you know? And I immediately, because of the advice we've gotten from a therapist who's helped us navigate a lot of this, and he helped paint the picture that we have to become educators with stuff like with grief, with talking about this kind of stuff, that like we have to help people
know how to engage
and understand.
I want to share that. Yeah.
So I had that in my framework and I immediately was like, oh, we think about it all the time. Like, here's my chance to say, you can ask. I needed to be able to say out loud to them, you can ask about this stuff anytime. There are no questions that are off limits. Like I'm not afraid of talking about this. I think about this all the time. I'm a total realist with this kind of stuff. Okay. Like there is no question that you need to be afraid to ask me. Like sometimes we just need to say stuff like that to people to give them permission that like, hey, you're not going to offend me. If you notice something about my kid, you don't have to be afraid to say it. You can ask me about it and ask me if it's hard. In fact, I would feel very seen if you asked me about it.
Well, I love all that you're saying is so important. And what, you know, on that topic of the relationships and loneliness, the hard part about the hard part is, I remember when I was talking to my therapist about this and I was just saying like, telling him a very normal, for instance, like people will treat our kids or these moments like they don't have disabilities. And like, I was getting offended by some stuff and some of it was either friends or family. I can't remember where it was because it was a while ago, but essentially what came up really quickly, he said, well, you do not have the luxury of being offended. And I was like, luxury of being offended? What are you talking about? And he hit it so on the head that it took me like 5 minutes to even fully wrap my head around what he was saying. He said, it's a luxury to be offended by something like, oh my gosh, how could you say that about my child? He's like, you don't have the luxury of doing that. You have to become an educator. You now need to take the hat of being offended off and you put the hat on of educating. So when someone tries to correct or do something, you say, oh, well, you know, she's actually responding that way because of A, B, and C. This is what happened to her brain. This is why that's happening. And I know you can't see it, but this is why that. So he was just basically trying to say no luxury, which was, I think, a perfect word. You don't have the luxury. So I would just say to you, I'd pass that along to you who's listening. Some of us do not have the luxury of being offended. We have to become educators. And I would say primarily and first and foremost with those closest to us, because I think there was a lot of questions about how do you handle this with family that doesn't understand? How do you handle the family that doesn't even agree with how you're moving through the world with this little one? Well, I think first you have to educate them on what's really going on fully before you can get offended or angry. And before they should even, you know, have too much of a say of what's going on. Do they see the whole picture? Do they understand fully what's going on? Do they know what you know? Mm-hmm. Because I would imagine a lot of the times if you educate them and pass along all that you know, their perspective would broaden. And I think a lot of the times the harshness or the disagreement would soften and be like, oh, I just didn't even know.
Yeah. I 100% agree with everything you're saying. I would have one add on. You have to find a way to educate without anger or shame. That's not motivating to anybody.
Yeah, that's a good word.
And a lot of the education is having to happen with probably your parents, especially let's just take kids who are neurodivergent. Ooh. Let's just take a softball, ADHD, sensory processing disorder. Let's just take those things, okay?
Kids should be able to eat everything on their plate. Yeah. You understand that? Wait, I have to say this. When we took Birdie to feeding therapy and they said, eating is the most abrasive and offensive to all your senses.
It's the only thing we do that requires all five senses.
All of our senses. And they're like, asking a kid to eat something and forcing them to eat something is so intense because it involves every single sense that we have, taste, touch, smell, sound, all of it. And it was really, that was like so eye-opening. Like how often do we hear the generation that was like, you will not leave until you eat this food. You're like, so anyway, that's not to throw shade on anybody because we've all had our moments where we didn't know what was going on. But like, just as an example, that's an education piece. That's totally. Like, yeah, she's not going to eat all the same stuff. And here's why. Mm-hmm. But anyway, keep going. Sorry. That was very
No, that's huge though. I mean, and so I think the people who are close and in our daily lives, this is not for everybody. There's going to be some people where you just don't say anything. But the people who are really in it with us, we have to educate with kindness and gentleness to be able to say things like, hey, I know that this looks like behavior. I know that it looks like I told my son to go do this chore and it looks like he just was careless and didn't feel like doing it and didn't do it. But he has ADHD. And so remembering to do the thing that he was asked to do by the time he gets up the stairs, that's difficult and we're working on it. And it doesn't always remember all the list of things that I gave him. And we're working on writing lists and we're working, I mean, that's just one example. Or maybe your kid's young and with any of the challenges we just mentioned, anger can be huge. They can have meltdowns at the drop of a hat because their brain works differently. And so being able to say, hey, I know what this looks like. It looks like the simple answer is I just need to discipline. I need to have more structure and boundaries. But hey, here's what's actually going on in their brain. Here's why we give a little more space to this. Like whatever language is helpful for you that you want to use, whatever the situation is that may be difficult. I think it's really, really important that we help bring our close people along with us in educating and explaining what's happening, because that is both for you to be able to have those people in it with you. It's for the child to be understood and not just constantly misunderstood. And that's something you have to get really comfortable with kids of differences of any kind, because you have to do that with their school. You have to do that with their grandparents. You have to do that with their friends' parents as they start to have closer relationships. And there's a lot of navigating and explaining that has to happen. And it's really important. And so, but I think it is, we have to work through our own frustrations to be able to do that in a way that's kind and gentle and direct. Like, hey, I really need you to understand what's happening here.
I think you're right. And I think that at least in our experience, one of the things that gums you up and trips you up more than anything, me personally, is we all have hardwired in us what we were taught is right or wrong, or how we were parented. And we bring these things subconsciously and consciously into our parenting. And if you have a neurodiverse child or special needs, any of that, you basically need to be okay with, and I'll just say this because this is what I've needed to hear so much, stop leaning on any of those old ways or foundational gut reactions like, oh, well, my parents did this, so that obviously this is how it's got to go. It doesn't work most of the time. And so you have to relearn how to parent this particular child in a way that works for them. And that is really hard and very time consuming. And really, I mean, at least in my experience, is highly humbling, highly disappointing. Not disappointed like I'm disappointed in my kids, but disappointed in how long it takes, like, to actually, like, oh man, I've made some leaps and bounds, like, in some areas. And then other areas, you're like, no, you're ground zero. Like, you're learning in real time how to handle a whole new type of parenting and a whole new child that has a whole different set of needs. And I think what I know I've been learning and learning, if you don't see it and you don't slow down and stop, you risk damaging so much. You do so much damage. And take it from me, like, I've had moments where I've created damage because I just couldn't fathom that this wasn't behavior, right? Like, everything in me is like, all the alarm bells are going off. This is behavior. This is behavior. This is behavior. And at the very same time, when you peel back the layers and are objective and understand who that little one is, you can be honest with yourself. Like, I don't know if that's just behavior. I think there are a lot of really complex things going on that I don't understand. And I'm just reacting based upon what I would naturally do. So I think it's really important that you look at what you naturally do and be okay with changing the whole system. Mm. I think it's really important.
Yeah. And that does not happen overnight.
No, it's still in real time happening for me. Yeah. I'm still in real time learning how to do this. And it's
I keep catching myself in moments when I, like, feel my, like, natural reaction to things and how I would respond, like, according to maybe how I was raised. Stop myself and, like, have an inner conversation with myself. That doesn't apply here. That's not going to work here. I need to set that over here. And all the things I feel about the fact that that's not going to work here. And I need to use the tools that I know are actually going to be helpful.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Well, I think your parents, and they're on the podcast often, so we say this to them, but even though they're not here, I mean, they had a lot of beautiful ideals to live into. And because most of those things were able to happen, they gave you a lot of structure of what things could look like, which I think is really beautiful. I also think that sometimes in those moments, if you had really thoughtful parents, that could actually unintentionally not help you right now. Like, and I'm not saying that your parents giving a good vision of what reality should look like is bad. It's just, I think you have to, good parents or bad parents, you need to take it all and say, who is the kid that is in front of me and what do they need? And what do I need to give them? And how can I show up for them? Even if I don't have a paradigm for all of this, that's really what needs to happen, no matter which angle you come from, because our extremes are different. You, Elizabeth, and I it's very different, our paradigms and upbringing. So,
yeah. Okay, maybe last question. Navigating the tension between developmental norms and Spicy needing extra support. Spicy, I'm assuming, is the child with
maybe they need some neurodiversity. Spicy.
I love that Spicy is the name of the child, or is what I'm assuming here.
At least it's their disposition sometimes.
Yeah. And in all honesty, the reason I picked this one is because this is the tension that we're navigating right now that we do not have an answer for, that I literally just said to my mom. We were driving to Portland, so we had like 3 hours, and somehow we started talking about all this. And I was like, said kind of frustratingly, I said, somebody needs to write a book that is not just about autism or just about disabilities or just about parenting, you know, neurotypical kids. Somebody needs to write a book about parenting the mixture of both because it is so hard. And she just laughed and she goes, pretty sure that's going to be you. Yeah. I said, no, yeah. I need the book like right now.
Yeah, we do.
So the only thing I can say, because we're navigating the messiness of this right now.
And I think you have a lot to say.
Is it messy? But the one thing that like comes to mind that I can say with confidence, I feel like I always want to be so careful to not speak to things that I haven't,
that we haven't lived.
Yeah. And we are currently living this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the thing that I'm learning is that in all the messiness and in all the things I don't have answers for right now, and all the fears, honestly, I have a lot of fears right now. Those of you who have kids who struggle with any of the things we've described that our daughter does, you understand sometimes the anger that comes from them and the relational difficulties that they have. And so I have a lot of fears around what all the sibling relationships are going to be like someday because of these dynamics in our home. And I think if there's one thing that we're clinging to, and I think is bearing fruit, is we have to create space for our neurotypical kids to be able to be honest about how hard it is. And for kids, that's not usually going to be this like, Mom, can I talk to you and can we have this calm conversation where I tell you about my laments? It's not going to look like that. They're going to be mad. They're going to be frustrated. They're going to say mean things. But it's their way of needing to express that this is hard. And so I think if we can, we're not going to get it every time, but if we can seize the moments that we can to create space for them to be able to express the reality that it's hard and it to be not met with, but you shouldn't feel that way because you should love your sibling, or don't respond in anger, but just to be met with, yeah, it's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have all the answers either. And we were just did an episode with Sally right before this, and we were talking to her about this, and she added, I'm gonna add it next time it comes up with our kids, but she said, yeah, just saying, yeah, it's confusing, isn't it? You love your sister and it's really hard and you're frustrated. It's both. Mm-hmm. It's confusing. It's like, oh, that's a good word to add to those conversations. I think we have to create space to be able to see them in the midst of it. And again, you're not going to get it every time. The reason it's called special needs is because these kids have, I think a better term maybe is extra needs. There are extra needs, and that's going to take extra time, which means it's going to be extra time that's I don't want to say taken away from the other kids, but it's going to be allotted differently. That's the reality of it. And so I think the more we can talk about the reality of it instead of, I don't know. I think we have to be so careful to shy away from ever saying to our other kids, ever unintentionally communicating, they just need to not feel about it or they need to feel differently. It's okay for them to be overwhelmed too, because we get overwhelmed as their parents.
Yeah, I was thinking how, you know, back to some of these other questions. There's just a handful of these questions. I'm thinking some specific things right now of how a lot of the times I know a fear that I have, because this is kind of part of it, fear of the future, but also the tension and the concern about, you said, the concern about their future relationships.
Yeah.
I think fear is a very normal thing to think through and even project, because we're seeing the moment and it's really tricky and it's really messy and it just looks really bleak a lot of the time. And so wherever you're at, I think you have to be honest about that. If your framework in your mind is that humans become great through all tension being taken away and being given everything that they want when they want it, being given every emotional need that they need met when they need it, being given all the finances, all the provision. If your framework and worldview is that that is how great humans are made, I would just vehemently disagree.
Say the Bible. Or if that's how we protect our kids.
Or if that's how you protect your kids, yeah. The way great humans are made, not only do we know this through, you know, psychology, but also biblically, is unfortunately, and also by God's grace, through tension. It's tension. It's how muscles grow, right? Like you have to put tension on muscles repeatedly, a little bit day by day, and they grow. And your kids grow through tension. Now, I don't like that because I get to see the tension. I get to see the pain. I get to see the hurt. And that's really hard because I don't know how much is too much and how much is too little. Like, I don't always know. I just also have, back to what we talked about with trust, I do trust, even though I don't fully grasp, that God's way is good and that he designed life to work in such a way that when tension comes, actually growth happens in ways that we can't fully see. And so if your story right now in your own life, in your own family, is tension and challenge and pain and stretching, and that word tension, I have to trust in some way that our kids are going to be stronger, fuller, more beautiful humans because of truly some of the suffering that they're going through now. They're having, I know for us in real time, just to be totally transparent, we are having to talk through and walk our kids through things that are really tricky and feel almost like they're too young to have to know all this or to emotionally hold all this. And then we get really surprised at times when our kids give us feedback or they'll say things like, yeah, guys, are you really tired? It must be really hard right now with where you're at. With, I don't remember what kid said what to who the other day, but I got wind that they were saying, oh, they were talking to your parents. Scarlett and Duke, they were talking with your parents at dinner. They had dinner and Duke was saying, it was Duke. He was saying that, he's like, man, mom and dad, they're great. Like, I couldn't believe he said this, but he was saying to them, and they relayed it to us because they knew it'd bless us. Like, they've got a lot on their shoulders right now with all this and they're doing a great job and they're really patient. I was like, oh my gosh. You know, like, we don't hear that directly. So if you don't hear that directly, don't worry. We don't either.
Yeah.
But to hear, like, that was our 15-year-old's perspective of our life situation gave me at least a glimmer of hope. And so I just think it's also important to remember that this tension, although very heavy, you can fight it and just try to understand every single ounce of it. And I think you'll probably drown in trying to understand all of it. There has got to be a level where you open your hands and your heart and say, God, I'm here. I don't fully understand. I don't even know where this is all going. I don't even know how to handle all this, but I'm in your care. Please direct me. Please hold me. Please help me. And breathe, because if not, you will literally drive yourself mentally and potentially spiritually insane. So I really do encourage, wherever you're at, this is really hard. And I think just coming from a couple who is sitting in it, it seems very cliche and even just popularized to say, we see you, but I think it's the right thing to say. I think we do totally understand where you are at and we are sorry because it's really hard. And I don't have anything positive to add to that. I'm just sorry because it's very hard. I also think that we, in this moment, Elizabeth and I, are grateful to be able to share anything with anyone listening, because I think that we hope to be what we haven't been able to have. And I think that when any couple comes to us or any person comes to us and just normalizes our situation and it gives us the ability to go, oh, wait, we're not crazy. That's a gift.
Yeah.
So hopefully this is a couple saying to you, you're not crazy. This is very hard.
I feel like we should pray. Jesus, we just, I love what Brooke shared, that John shared, that we need more people. I just picture exhausted and falling at your feet and saying, God, increase my capacity to shoulder this life that you've given me. And so we, Brooke and I, sitting in this room, and anybody's listening to this, we as parents or friends of parents or family of parents who have kids that need more, that have complexities, that carry invisible burdens and visible ones. We just say, we as parents, we sit at your feet and we say, would you increase our capacity to shoulder this load of life, knowing that one day it will not be this heavy. One day our kids will live fully freed up in perfect bodies with perfect minds. And we have that hope to look forward to, but Jesus, we just ask that you would equip us for the right now, for the not yet part, for the now and the part that we long for but is not. God, we just ask that you would increase our capacity, increase our love, increase our patience, increase our knowledge to be able to understand these unique, beautiful gifts that you've given us. Would you help us learn their language? Would you help us unfold these beautiful mysteries that you've given us and you've somehow given us an intuition into because you've given them us as our children. And so would you just help us to trust your spirit, trust your guiding, trust your leading, and would you equip us for the task that you've given us?